Welcome to Cutting Edge Web Content Development, the podcast where we delve into the world of CMS systems and their crucial role in website and web content development. In each episode, we'll explore the reasons why founders, CEOs, CTOs, and CMOs of web content development companies need CMS systems to thrive in the digital landscape. Get ready to uncover the secrets behind successful website management, content creation, and seamless user experiences. Here's your host, Jonathan Ames.
Welcome to Cutting Edge Web Content Development, a podcast by Butter CMS. Here we share insights on the intersection of content and web development and how you can align these two often competing forces to improve efficiency and business results. Joining us on this episode is AJ Saunders, founder of Audacious Commerce, an e-commerce growth agency that helps brands grow online sales by creating actionable strategy-first roadmaps. So AJ, give us a brief intro to your background and how you got into marketing and e-commerce.
Yeah, sure. So my first career was as a musician. I played guitar. Lots of people don't believe that because they think that I'm this data scientist nerd, but yes, I do in fact play guitar. I in fact play drums as well. And so yeah, after about 5 years of doing that and making their money, I came back to where I'm from. So I'm from this little city called Bath, which everybody knows because of Jane Austen, or Bridgerton is the latest people thing that people know it for. And so yeah, so came back here and literally Googled how to make money online. And I found this magical world called digital marketing. And so we're talking kind of 12, 13 years ago now. So I discovered people like Neil Patel when he wasn't Neil Patel, you know, Pat Flynn when he was just starting out. Yeah. Those types of people, right? All those household names that weren't massive at the time. And yeah, so I fell into that. I then started an e-commerce business. We were selling watches and jewelry and homeware, and anything about the watch trade, it makes money for 1 month of the year, and that is December.
Yes.
So it's not the most sustainable business.
But that's wonderful that you got hands-on, in the trenches experience with e-commerce yourself. It wasn't just something you're advising about. You actually had the experiences. So I'm sure that really helps you identify with clients and kind of their pain points.
Yeah. And so now I run the e-commerce growth agency, but I run... It's kind of like a dagger, and I'll explain what I mean by that because it's not, right? I talk about marketing a lot, right? Because I'm passionate about marketing and I'm a marketer through and through, but I believe marketing touches every aspect of your business. So for a lot of people, they may think I'm an ops guy or, you know, I'm a finance guy because I talk a lot about how to do marketing from an ops or a finance or a customer experience kind of way, where for me, everything is marketing. And if you look at everything to be marketing, it doesn't really matter if we're talking about the P&L, we're talking about logistics, we're talking about product mix, we're talking about the latest TikTok ads, right? It's all the same. And so, yeah, so, but I find that people have a concept of what marketing is. So if I go and I say, right, I do business development, people think that I'm going to turn up in a Maserati and say nothing they couldn't already know themselves. When they say, hey, I'm a marketer, they go, so you do social media? And I go, well, that's one thing that I can help you with. So they have a point of reference. I find that is far more succinct and far more, well, it's far less offensive than saying, hey, I do business development and I'm going to make you lots of money, because that may not be the case, right?
Sure. So you'd mentioned it in your e-commerce agency, you're focused on strategy first. How do you identify those strategies for a client?
Cool. So I want to make this distinction here. So there's strategy as a singular, which is a purposeful design of a business. And there are strategies, which is essentially what people will call it. Well, people call tactics, which is an action step that we take, strategies. So you'll make that abundantly clear. So for me, strategy at its heart is a series of logical decisions and logical hypotheses that position you to win in the type of game that you're trying to play. We think of a couple of things that come to mind. So we think of like McDonald's, right? McDonald's is cheap, everywhere, clean and consistent, right? Yeah, they haven't got there by accident. It's taken them billions and billions of dollars to realize that actually those four things are really the key things they can win at, and that they can win at versus, say, like a Michelin star restaurant that may be expensive, inconsistent, even though they wouldn't be, but right, you get the point, right? Or you look at something like Spirit Airlines, who fly, you know, who've decided to fly one type of airplane from one airport to the next airport with one type of pilot, with one type of carriage class and keeping fees low. So they've made a series of choices that have that mean that they're positioned to win at the game that they're trying to play versus, say, American Airlines, who are playing to play. They've got nothing competitive in terms of how they are set up as a business. And therefore, strategy for me is trying to figure out what operationally can you do better than your competition? Where do you want to get to? What resources do you have and what limitations do you have? So say like with the jewelry business, you can say, well, actually, we're just going to retail two types of brands, you know, Rolex and Omega, because actually that's where we think we can win within our locale because there's no other Rolex dealer, right? That's basic strategy. That's not the whole nine yards, but that's enough to get you your understanding. Whereas tactics may be, right, we're only going to run PPC ads, or we're all going to do SEO, or we're only going to post on Instagram on Friday, that kind of thing. That's tactics. And so, yeah, so it's strategy is having a plan, the tactics is the action steps, and then a campaign, for example, which is the next logical step on, is a time-based activity. So you say we might run a three-month campaign that we're going to test this hypothesis out, i.e. that we can build up our following on Instagram to 10,000 by posting every day, or by posting three times a day, or whatever. And by doing that, you're then testing out the hypothesis, and that's a campaign. Yeah. Is that clear?
Well, no, it's very clear. I think that's an area of a lot of misunderstandings in executive circles. I think the reason why most executives tend to confuse tactics with strategy is because tactics are much quicker to test. You can either know that tactic worked or it didn't pretty quickly. Whereas a strategy, it takes typically a long time to know, are we on the right course? Are we on the right, wrong course? Is this performing as well as this other strategy we could have chosen? And so I think that's where often the confusion comes from.
I agree.
Yeah. So talking about strategies, and now that you've defined this nicely for us, what kind of strategies would you recommend for, say, a small business using e-commerce to scale up their sales?
Yeah, sure. So if you're a small business, operationally, you're already a disadvantage, but you've got other inherent advantages. So one thing that I feel that small businesses do very, very poorly is they try and market themselves like an all-you-can-eat buffet. So they've got a million full different options, and they're not confused. They're confused about what the price is going to be, what the deliverables are, what the outcomes will be. Whereas, again, to use McDonald's as an example, McDonald's sells four different hamburgers. And so you either go to McDonald's, you like McDonald's, or you go right down the road to KFC, and you think, well, KFC only sells four different types of chicken. Same kind of thing. So I think if you're a small business, the first thing that you should be doing is thinking about how you can package up what you do as basic packages. What that allows you to do is A, standardize delivery, standardize pricing, and then allows you to figure out what can be customized and what can't be customized on top. So you can give people options, but you can also know, right, predictable revenue is we're going to do X, Y, and Z. That gives us an outcome. And so, yeah, so for me, it's about packaging things up. The next stage is that by having products, well, have packaged products as a service, right? Service packages as products allows you to then retail that like it's a physical item on your store. And so a lot of people, and I think you probably can speak to this better than any of us, a lot of us probably think, right, we need to get a clever website, we need to have all this fun stuff, whereas actually I'm a massive believer in doing both minimal viable product and minimal viable marketing, right? There's two things, there's two concepts, and they're essentially identical things, right? So one is you package everything up, you know, say on a Monday, and by Friday you have a basic e-commerce system up and running on your website that allows you to take orders, allows you to start to test that out, and then if that works, then you can start to build out some of this functionality that you and pretty stuff and those kind of things. But you're not worried about, right, thinking about, right, how can you run a paid social campaign? How can we do more? It literally is package everything up, go out to the market, your existing customer base, say to them, you can now buy online, you're choosing these options. Does that make sense to you? Great, cool. You've got proof of concept. And so that's where I think, and I'm calling this the third wave of e-commerce, believe the third wave of e-commerce puts predictable revenue into a business, number one, but also puts the ability for the consumer to buy when they are ready to buy without having to jump through the business's predetermined hoops. I want to give you just a quick example.
Yeah, yeah.
When was the last time you found an electrician?
Oh, goodness. Electrician, not recently, but
right.
We did recently have our water heater go out, so we needed a plumber.
Fantastic. That's my other useful example. So, right. You imagine you can go onto your local plumber's website and say, right, I want you to come between 12 and 2 on Tuesday afternoon to inspect my water heater because it's gone out. You don't have to phone them. You have to email them. You have to catch them in the street. You don't have to wait for them to respond to you. You can just do it online. It's filled. And then they can obviously call you back when they get the booking to say, hey, I'm just double checking that this is right. Does this make sense? Great. We'll be there between 12 and 2 on Tuesday, right? You imagine as a consumer how empowered you now feel. Massively, right?
Oh,
massively.
Yeah. Great.
As a business owner, you are now not missing calls. You're now not having to phone people back. You're now not having to do the whole, why didn't you get email case again, malarkey, right? Or, yeah, I saw that WhatsApp, but then I was in the middle of fixing a water heater, so the next responds, right? And so it becomes predictable revenue because you can predict, right, if 12 people book this month to do this type of service, it's likely the 12 people next month will book to do the same type of service. You've got predictable revenue. You can, and then you can begin to scale, begin to contract based on the market demand that you can foresee 3 weeks, 4 weeks, 3 months out.
And not just that, that becomes a differentiator. Absolutely. I mean, I can tell you right now that there's no plumbers in my area who allow that kind of functionality. Exactly. If one of them popped up, and I, you know, typically what people do for services, they're like, plumbers near me in Google Maps, and you'll bunch pop up and you start going through them, looking at ratings, and then try calling them and such. But there's no e-commerce functionality there. Now, if you had something like, hey, book here, and just had a little thing, you could click it, and then it said, what times do you want? And here's an estimate of what it might cost. And you say, yeah, ching, let's put that into the cart. Yeah, that would be a game changer. I think people would respond to that.
Because the other thing about e-commerce, and I think a lot of people get this wrong, is you don't have to set the payment then and there. You can use it as like a quote function. We can use it as an ability to just do sales enablement that then you have to fill manually. I can give you a story. A couple of years ago, one of my sisters turned 40 and she's a bit of a daredevil and she likes to do all these crazy like skydiving. And, you know, I don't know where it comes from because I'm conservative and quiet and exactly reserved.
Oh, you just got yours out early with the guitar and the drums.
Right.
Did your thing.
I love it. So I looked at bungee jumping locally, right? And they're doing it in the harbour of the next city along, a city called Bristol. What I was able to do is I was able to go and say, right, you know, she would like a slot on this Saturday between these times. You know, here's the credit card. And they click the book button and it pops up. And it says, we haven't taken your payment. We're going to double check that we've got availability and it's safe to do it on that day. If it is, we'll get you booked in and then we'll charge you. If not, nothing happens. And I thought this is game changing because it means that you don't have to hit payment. And actually, in that case, it turned out that that day was going to be high wind, so they cancelled. And so I got an email an hour later saying, we're really sorry, but it's not going to work out. I said, great, fantastic. And actually, she then found somebody who was local to the paragliding. She had phoned them up and said, right, cool, but that's not next Tuesday. And it was good, right? But it changed my idea about what e-commerce could be like and how e-commerce could function. Another quick example. So I was talking to a health and safety trainer last year, and this guy must be in his late 50s, early 60s, and he sort of does everything over the phone. You imagine the amount of business he's losing.
Old school, yeah.
Old school, very, very old school. Right.
And there's a lot of businesses that still do that. A lot of B2B, like wholesale does it like that. There are service businesses, like you talked about, that do it that way, all over the phone.
But you imagine for health and safety training, they probably have 5 or 6 different packages that they could... that are offering all the time, and then some basic customization on top. You imagine if you could go on at your leisure and just click, I'll have that 3-day package with 52 options. You click the buy button. It says, we're not going to charge you. Thanks. Somebody in the office will call in the next 2 working days. That person then picks up the phone and says, right, I've got 20 questions to ask you in the next like 20 minutes. If any of the 20 questions, it makes sense for us to go forward. We'll book in the date and we'll press the payment. If it doesn't, we probably can recommend a firm that will be better for you. You're still delivering excellent customer service. You're still delivering really personable service, but you're doing sales in a way that enables the customer to take the power back. That's why I'm a massive fan of e-commerce.
Excellent. All right. Well, let's say someone is interested in this strategy. Let's talk now down to tactics.
Sure.
So what are some tactics someone interested in this kind of e-commerce strategy? They're packaging up some service that they have, putting it as a product, put it in here for people to book. So how are people going to, how can they get people to find them? How can they test and know? hey, this is working, because now you got it set up. Now you got to put people into the funnel.
So minimal viable marketing is essential at this point. So what I mean is we can do things like low costing. So we could do some PR, we could do some social posts, we could phone all our existing clients or the customers that we've had in the last, say, 12 months. We could email them all, because we probably have email addresses. We could use something low cost, like send them a flyer. You know, all of these simple, very basic things to actually see if we can do a proof of concept before we actually spend first $100 or first $1,000, right? So I'm a massive fan of doing that first. So doing all that hard, nitty work that's not fun, but is needed to get momentum behind it. As you build momentum, then you can think about, right, should we be running paid campaigns? Should we be investing in SEO? Should we be investing in paid social? Should we be running like a weekly newsletter that we're talking about what services we're offering and why they are easy to purchase online, etc.? But yeah, no, start with things that you can do for free that are going to be instantaneous in terms of results. Here, then, when you've got proof of concept, then think about what medium and long-term tactic can we roll out that will allow us to scale, but also allow us to not overly spend money on marketing that may not work out or may take a year to figure out.
So proof of concept is done through this minimum viable marketing, which is just quickly, let's see if it works. It doesn't cost a lot. We're going to do it through email or say PR or something that's quick. And then after that, let's say you do get some results from this and you're like, okay, this might work. So one of those long-term tactics then you might try is like, say, SEO. Any tactical advice for companies wanting to optimize their SEO so they play into this strategy?
Yeah, sure. So the majority of small businesses have a website. The majority of small businesses have a very, very poor website.
Yes. Both true.
Both true. So actually, one thing that's really, really key is to really simplify your architecture. And what I mean by that, and you'll get this because you're a smart guy who's dealing with websites. If you have a top menu bar that has a million or three different options, you've lost the game already. I was actually auditing a site today that had, I think, six on the top, 12 drop downs, and then had about 12 different options on their homepage, right? And I was auditing it with three other people today because we're doing an audit for them at the moment. And I was saying to the other three, for me, they could get rid of 90% of this and they would actually have a better user flow. And so, if you think about, right, what is the sole purpose of somebody landing on your website? Is it to buy a product? Is it to get more information? Is it to book a discovery call? Is it to learn more about how you solve, what problems you solve, right? If you think about that one key thing and then optimize your top menu for it, that's number one. Number two, really delve into what problems do you solve and what are people searching for that are those questions. So I was talking to a good friend of mine yesterday. He's a copywriter, and he was saying, at the moment I'm writing about, should you go get counseling if you're depressed? And he wants to just try and sell African art. And I said to him, the underlying purpose hasn't changed, right? You're still answering a question, whether you're trying to sell somebody mental health support or you're trying to sell somebody a car, or you're trying to sell somebody some artwork. The purpose hasn't changed. It's just question and the type of question that you're asking and how implicit you are with that question. And so really think about what types of questions are your potential buyers asking? How can you give them information that isn't hitting them over the head, but is digestible? And then how can you build it out so that you're asking them to take baby steps, multiple baby steps? So when they are ready to buy, they are, but you haven't pushed them over the Grand Canyon and go, well, can you not jump to the other side, right? Because a lot of websites are doing that. Still, this very day, they're going, well, you can jump, can't you? No, I need some intermediary steps to allow me to feel comfortable. And then thirdly is just make sure that people have the option to contact you or the option to book calls or the option to actually take action. And it's obvious.
Yeah, very good advice. So
thank you.
Baby steps here and allow people to move forward at their pace, have something very clear that they can take action right then. Simplify your menu. I want to go into the baby steps one. One of the common things that most businesses, I would say, do to try and provide a baby step is they have sign up for our email list, get our newsletter. Do you think that's still viable for most businesses, or is that something that's past its usability date?
So email marketing is still viable, absolutely, but the intent has to be there to send an email. with two e-commerce companies that I've worked with in the last 2 years, I've made them thousands of dollars a piece by literally sending an email. Because people get into this whole malaise about email marketing that somebody's going to unsubscribe, or somebody's going to get angry, or somebody click the spam button, or somebody's going to phone in and shout at you. And I'm like, if you're that concerned, you really shouldn't be in business. But also, if somebody is that annoyed, there's ways to turn the conversation around and use it for intelligence gathering. So I'm a massive believer that, yes, have email sign-up forms, but also do something with that data. But then the other thing you can do, one thing that I've seen more and more, is rather than using email signups, you should use like a WhatsApp live chat button, right? We can contact them, the company, immediately. Or try and do things like, give us your phone number, let us text you, those kind of things that are still interactive. But yeah, no, it's about having a purpose behind what your data you're collecting and how you're using that data. So yeah.
Yeah, makes sense. So, all right, let's get a little further into tactics here.
Sure.
Somebody you say who just starts into e-commerce for the first time, what kind of tactics would you suggest to them? And we talked about minimal viable product, testing it out. We talked about some ways and some site design changes. What other tactics might someone try with e-commerce for the first time?
So I think you have to really find where your community lives. I'm going to use community in the commas here because I'll explain. So I think you really have to be really mindful of where the types of people that you're trying to reach live versus where the conventional wisdom is. I can give you an example. So I was consulting a couple of weeks ago with a friend of mine who's starting a plus-size clothes brand. And I was saying to him, I think your audience is on Reddit and on Twitch. Because if you imagine your average Twitch streamer has probably been given a Secret Labs chair or like some highfalutin chair that's worth a couple hundred bucks. And they'd be given really, really kind of poor swag with it. We can flip that model, get a really, really high quality swag to go with a really high quality chair. It's a winner. And so by doing that and not by saying, right, well, we need to be on Facebook, we need to be on Instagram because that's where everyone else is. But also, who cares about another clothing brand on Facebook? It's going to get lost, right? Even if it's the most amazing clothing brand, it's going to get lost. When you're looking for, right, our community is larger people, therefore, what are they going to be into? Oh, they might be into gaming. They might be into tech. So we can look at those avenues. And so for me, yeah, it really is about trying to figure out where your audience lives and then going and building relationships with people who can be of influence within those communities. And then you can allow them to percolate within the community without it being forced, without it being showful. I mean, if I take a word, yes. You understand.
Yeah, maybe smaller channels that people can go through that might be good niche spots for your particular audience. I know we have a lot of developers on this podcast who listen, and half of them right now are going, what, you're saying I need plus size clothes? And the other half is nodding their head and going, yeah.
It's just an example of where, you know, I'm looking for where your audience lives and not.
Yes. No, I get it. So yeah, and that's a good idea is how do you find these smaller niche spots, put some thought into. So I was just like, let's go to the biggest place where I get the word out, find these smaller locations. All right.
So I spent my misspent youth on a guitar forum called thegearpage.net, right? I'll never forget that.
Uh-huh.
And there are so many brands that launched on there because somebody had an idea, somebody had a bit of capital, a bit of know-how into the electronics to build an effect pedal or a new guitar that have now spawned entire companies that are with like Guitar Center, Stop West Guitar Center, are stopped by all these major retailers, but their genesis was on that platform. And it's a bulletin board, by the way. It's not one of these clever looking, it's quite ugly looking images of this very day. But the whole thing is they took the simplest route to market. They went and evangelized around people who are like-minded about how great what they were producing, that there was a market for it. And then they figured out how to scale from there. They didn't think, right, we need to Guitar Center, we need to compete with Boss effects pedals, big brands, right? Or Fender, right? They thought, right, how can I do proof of concept and how can I let it grow from there?
Excellent. Well, let me ask you a couple questions, AJ, about just in your career. Sure. If you could go back in time to yourself when you were into the guitar and drums, what advice would you give yourself? Things that you've learned now over the years that you would give yourself early in your career?
Sure. So this is really interesting. So I actually spoke to the guy who came up with the term corporate brand like 3 hours ago. he just randomly drops into a group that I do, and it was just me and him. We talked for 40 minutes. And it was so fascinating because I think he's probably in his 70s now. Really fascinating guy. Really, he was in advertising 40, 50 years ago, right? So he's, and so this is really, really interesting because I actually asked him this question. But for me, talk to more people. I think that's one thing that we as, so I'm an introvert. I know I've talked quite a bit in the last half an hour, but I'm an introvert. And so I find it really difficult to talk to people. But I've found that if I can find like-minded people that we can talk about a concept or an idea, I've got quite a bit to say. So talk to more people that are like-minded. Number two, things take 10 times as long as you think they will take. So reminding myself of this today. I can't remember who said the following, but the only place vision becomes before work is the dictionary. There's no, the only place that work becomes before vision is a dictionary, right? And so for me, yeah, it's about trying to manage what you're doing now within what you're trying to do, which may take longer. And I think the third thing is to just realize this is all a big game. I don't mean in terms of it is a game, right? I mean, in terms of if your mentality is everything is a plus or minus, it's going to have a massive effect on your life. You will overlook small things that will give you momentum. You have the green shoots, but you'll also celebrate the wins that that hold you back from taking that next step. And I think the smartest people that I've come across, and actually this is Barbara Corcoran, who was on the Shark Tank, said, so how the best salespeople weren't the smartest, weren't the hardest working, but were the people that, when they said, turned around and said, no, I'm taking that deal, they put the phone down and they picked the phone back up. It was like, and this is her analogy, it was like somebody hit them in the face, they got knocked to the floor, they stood up and said, is that all you've got? Hit me harder. Right? And so I think the people that I admire the most, the people that are able to take the punches, to take the wins, and it doesn't matter, it's the same. I'm a massive fan of tennis, right? I think the best tennis people's on, the best tennis players are the people that walk off court and go, what's for lunch? Or, like, actually, the other thing about tennis is when they're in the game, it's like they've forgotten the last point, where they've lost the one, the last point, right? That's why they have such big scoreboards, by the way. So the players don't have to remember, they just have to focus on playing that point. And if you look at the great tennis players, they're in that moment. They're not focusing on whether they've won, lost, or momentum. They're just focused on, right, can I win this? Because if I can win this, then it starts to stack up. I mean, closer to winning. And so, yeah, I'm just reminded often that actually it's a continuation, right? And it's the positives, it's the negatives, and it's just the continuation. You sit there and you try and do better and you try and do more. So, yeah.
Yeah, excellent advice, AJ.
My pleasure.
Well, tell me a little bit about Audacious Commerce. Where can people find you online?
Yeah.
Who is a good match for Audacious Commerce and kind of what's your special sauce that you offer for them?
What's special sauce?
American phrase.
I know, sir.
Well, it was McDonald's that did it.
Yeah, right. Well, it's actually KFC, wasn't it?
Oh, KFC too.
Yeah.
Recipe, yes.
The herbs and spices, yeah. I've got eating chicken off this. So Audacious Commerce is essentially me repackaging all that I look from running an e-commerce business to help other e-commerce businesses understand what marketing is, what ops are, and how to use that to build a profitable business. And I wouldn't use the word profitable intentionally because I don't believe the majority of people want to do something that may get them to cups of milk in revenue, but is profitable and feeds their family, gives them a nice lifestyle, gives them holidays. They don't want to be buying private jets. They don't want to be driving Lamborghinis and that kind of thing, right? All this ilk that we see on social media, but they want something small and profitable. And the way that I do that is through a three-step process. So I do strategy first, which is building a roadmap from where you are to where you want to get to. Number two is tactical delivery. So whether that's SEO, PPC, pop-up shops, flyers and boxes, whatever, your capacity and capabilities to handle that. And then step three is partnerships. So for me, partnerships is really our secret sauce because it's the way we can achieve more with less, quicker, better, and cheaper. So I can give you an example. I've got a good friend of mine in Israel who gets physical products into stores in American chains. So your Walmart, your Best Buy, your CVS's, right? Now, me and you together, we're two smart guys, right? Me and you together probably can get our product into Walmart. But it may take us 2 years, may take us 3 years, right? And may cost $250,000, right? My friend Taylor can do that probably for $20,000 because he knows the one or the two people to phone to get that meeting. And so for me, partnerships is really our secret and the way we make things work, because we can leverage other people's experience, other people's knowledge, other people's inherent biases, etc., to allow us to move quicker, faster, better, more leaner. And that's why I'm a massive fan of it.
All right. So now there's people who are thinking, I will really want to talk to AJ. How do they find you?
Right. So they can go to alldatacommons.com. They can book a free 15-minute call with me there. They can go on to LinkedIn. We'll put that in the show notes. I'm heavily active on LinkedIn. That's how we connected, actually. And then, yeah, and then Instagram as well. I've got a personal account, which is just A_J_Saunders. I'm heavily active on that. And I love to people who have heard me on podcasts. I've made loads of great friends through doing that. So I'm available. I'm here to talk to people. I love to talk to people. I feel like I work in the industry. I don't know how you feel about this. This may be a little bit different for what you do. There are so many marketing firms that are run by salespeople who don't know how to execute. And so they end up mis-selling. And so for me, the best disinfectant I can be to that ill is just to be transparent, to be open, to talk to anyone and everyone. And so that's what I try and do, because I realize, A, I'm not a salesperson, but I do sales. But also, I'm an executor. I can explain why certain things may not work. Because I've got no skin in the game, I'm more than happy to say, well, actually, that's not going to work. And so again, I'm happy to talk to anyone and everyone, because I'm trying to change the industry from the inside out.
Excellent. Thank you so much, AJ. Really appreciate your insights. Great.
My pleasure.
Foundational understanding you have of strategy, some really, as you would say, executable tactics, things that really work in the real world to help somebody make profit. And love those insights. Thank you so much for your time.
My pleasure.
Cutting Edge Web Content Development is brought to you by Butter CMS. To find out how you can build better with Butter, stop wasting dev time, and free your marketers from your legacy CMS, visit buttercms.com. Also, make sure to search for Cutting Edge Web Content Development in Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Podcasts, or anywhere else podcasts are found. Make sure to click subscribe so you don't miss any future episodes. On behalf of the team here at Butter CMS, thank you for listening.